A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, you wonderful podcast listeners. Welcome to the latest edition of Red Men Weekly, where we bring you some of the best clips from all of our subscriber Red Men Plus shows. Before I start on this, just for you guys for tuning into the show each and every week, I have got a deal for you. If you sign up to redmenplus.com on a Club Captain yearly subscription, if you enter the code weekly on the payment screen, W-E-E-K-L-Y, that's W-E-E-K-L-Y, you will get that subscription for half price for a year. It works out at 48 pence a week, pretty much 48p a week for a year's worth of content to get access to all of these shows that you're about to listen to and tons more. So yeah, if you do want to check it out, like I say, redmenplus.com, sign up, use the code weekly when you subscribe as a club captain on a yearly subscription and you'll get it for 48p a week. And best of all, it can go into your native podcasting apps as well. So do go and check that out over on redmenplus.com. Right then, speaking of redmenplus.com, the first show that we had there this week was the final word from Liverpool versus Chelsea. And it wasn't the most exciting game in the world, was it, to be honest? But it was still a pleasure to chat through it with Abby and with Emma. So yeah, here's what we had to say about Liverpool's 0-0 draw with Chelsea. It just felt like a game that lacked in quality for both sides. Both defences were just about on top, but it neither side, in an attacking sense, made it difficult for each other. Like, it was 9 versus 10 going into the game, and that's kind of how it played out. It was just a pretty, two very, what looked like mediocre football teams, and especially if you put that in context to other football games that have happened over the weekend.
Yeah.
United-Arsenal, just like much more quality City as well. It did feel like Liverpool-Chelsea were just two teams, maybe a little bit devoid of confidence.
Yeah, 100%. I was in the office on Saturday covering, obviously, the games in the Premier League, and that was by far one of the worst ones that day. Like you say, it was quite comfortably a mid-table sort of clash. Two teams really, really struggling for form, struggling for confidence. There was no intensity, no quality. I think, you know, the identity of both teams was hard to find. They were sort of a shadow of themselves equally, respectively, sort of, you know, from a year or two ago. I did, you know, like the Palace-Newcastle game later that day, and that was much better quality than a Liverpool-Chelsea game. And, you know, I wouldn't have thought I would have said that 2 years ago, so... Yeah, it was just a slog, wasn't it? Just to watch. I can imagine for the fans that were there at Anfield, it was a freezing afternoon, nothing to cheer about, nothing to get off a seat for. So, yeah, really, really disappointing game of football. And again, another disappointing performance from Liverpool.
Speaking of fans, you were there. I was there.
I was absolutely froze to death, basically, and it weren't worth it. At one point, I was literally bashing my feet against the floor to bring them back to life, and it just weren't worth it. Like, my dad couldn't go, so I gave his ticket to my uncle, and my uncle afterwards was like, that was not worth, like, getting up and missing me lying. It was just poor. I was expecting it to be like the Arsenal-Man United game last night. I was hoping there'd be something there, like, that fight, that excitement, and I don't know why I expected that, to be honest, because we really are two mid-table teams now. You know, when you look at it, that could have been any mid-table team last night playing, and it's sad, really. And all the fans that did go out and stand there, and was it -2 at one point? Just wasn't worth it for them, to be honest. But
no, yeah. You're right. And like I say, sometimes it's hard to get up for it in the cold. You need something on the pitch. And I'll stick with you. I watched it in here. Actually, I didn't go. See, I was on the watch along with Errol. You knew pretty early on. You get the sense of how our game's going, yeah. And both teams you could tell were very, very cagey to start with. Chelsea probably had shaded it, but in general, in the first half, maybe I'll talk about some moments in a minute. But in general, it was almost a bit like and they're like a boxer who's got a weak chin, and that both of them have got weak chins, so they're scared to get hit, so they're just kind of half jabbing each other. But nobody was really like, there was no magic bit of quality or skill. It was just everyone was just trying to keep things a bit simple, and they probably weren't even able to do that. It did come across like, but I don't know if scared to lose is the right thing, but I think both teams know that they're vulnerable a little bit, and therefore they were both, neither was willing to take that chance or play that killer pass or take that risk, because they were just worried that the defensively they weren't a hold up.
Yeah, it was slow, wasn't it? I mean, Konate and Gomez did well, to be fair. I thought Konate did better than Gomez, but I don't know if that's because the fella in front of me had like an agenda against Gomez and he kept going, there you are, being bullied again. I was thinking, he is actually like Robert encouraging me. That's the thing, but... Yeah, I don't know. Salah just hasn't got his shooting boots on at the minute, and I feel like that's not helping. Gakpo had like three shots just go absolutely flying. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to judge him yet. It's far too soon to judge him. Don't really like Elliot on the left. I don't know. It's hard to find positives at the minute, isn't it?
Especially from an attacking sense. Let's go through the team then, because there was a couple of decisions the manager had to make. Firstly, right back, Trent's out. He decides to go with Milner because he could have moved Gomez over there and go with Matip, but I think he decided to go with the two centre-halves that done quite well against Wolves. And I actually think Gomez and Konate, for the most part, did okay. But I'll get you upwards on that. Midfield, the exact same. He said, right, yous were much better than the lads who got fucking wellied around Brighton everywhere, so you used that he can play again. I don't think anyone had too many problems with that. But then up front, and with Abbey, it felt like he'd rewarded Harvey with a place. But he had to bring Mo Salah in, and therefore it's Harvey Elliott who gets shifted out to a side where he's completely that's three games in a row now where he's played three different positions and things, and the balance never felt right, especially in the attacking third. It felt like we probably have two lads both in the wrong position, and it was kind of trying to pretty much keep Mo Salah on that right hand side.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, on paper before kickoff, I actually was fine with the team. I understand, obviously, the points that you're making in terms of the attack, but I agree, midfield, I was happy to see that midfield.
Same.
I do think Konate and Gomez did pretty well at centre-back, but that would have been maybe the only changes that I probably would have put Gomez at right-back over Milner, and I would have had Matip in there. But again, I could understand the selection. Wasn't really that fussed about it. And I quite like the fact that he awarded Elliot with a place, and I know what you're saying about moving Salah across. I actually think what I would have done was probably... what I would have done is move Salah across, because I think, as you know, as Abby said, I think Salah's been poor for months now. This isn't, you know, a slow dip in form. This has been a consistent period of, you know.
So stick him up front and put Elliot right and Gakpo left.
Yeah,
I think all three of them might have been a bit more comfortable.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I think if you're going to reward Harvey with a place, then give him his actual place. Don't just put him in the side. And especially when he's a player who is one of those few in the squad at the moment that have got a bit of confidence and had come off the back of a good game. Salah's not got that. We know that he's a confidence player. He always has been since he joined Liverpool. When he feels like the king, he plays like one. And he's not doing that at the moment. So if you're going to have to sacrifice someone's position, I get it's probably a hard conversation to have with someone like Mo Salah, but at the end of the day, Jurgen Klopp's the boss, and I think he just maybe needed to make that call and put Harvey Elliott in his right position.
It feels like happening at the minute. The left-hand side of the front three is like a graveyard shift that nobody wants, and everyone's taking turns to just go and do it. I don't know, I used to work in Asda, and there used to be this horrendous shift that used to do, and it was like 8:30 till like 12, so it was in between the day staff going home and the nights coming in, and no one wanted that shift. And in the end, everyone just started taking turns of doing it between we'll all do one each a month or something, because everyone hated it. It feels like the left-hand side, you've got Chamberlain doing jobs that doesn't like it, really. Carvalho, okay, maybe he'd be all right there, but Jürgen doesn't seem to fancy him. Gakpo's been out there once. Now Elliot's been out there.
They're just waiting for Luis Diaz to come back.
Diaz, but, and Darwin, perhaps, who was there before he got injured. Yeah. Jota can do it. But yeah, it feels at the moment, whoever's getting... No, the left-hand side of Liverpool's attack is almost just a body, because the team isn't functioning to get them in the game anyway, because it's almost everyone knows that fella's out there, he's just doing a job. Let's get down the middle, let's get down to Mo Salah. It does feel like whoever's out there, it's not ideal. I don't know, again, he's been hesitant to change the formation, he doesn't want to go away from it, but this is what happens when you lose basically your three left wingers. Diaz is out, Jota's out, and then Darwin is out. Someone's going to have to go and do a job there. But I felt sorry for Harvey Elliott, because I thought he would have one, him and Bajcetic were the best players against Wolves. Bajcetic gets to stay in the team, do rightly so, I think, plays where he plays, had another decent game. And you're Harvey Elliott, who had his best game for a while, playing in right wing. He's over there now. Yeah. And it was to accommodate Mo Salah, which, again, he's Mo Salah, I half get. But the flip side is, you've done him no favours there. Now he's had another bad game. A couple of people are sort of on his back again. His confidence might take a hit, and it's not really his fault.
It's the injuries down the left side at the minute. I mean, there's nothing we can do. I feel like I am getting really angry about the results at the minute, but you've just got to remember that the likes of Diaz and Jota and all that will be back eventually, but it's when will they be back?
I feel like at least probably, haven't you?
That's the thing. We've got so many games before they're probably going to be back, and even then, we might even have more setbacks because, you know, we all thought Diaz was going to be back and he wasn't. So I just don't know. It feels painful to go over it, but Elliot gets so much hate on Twitter and stuff like that, and I hate it, but putting him on that left side like that yesterday, it was just like a body, and I do feel sorry for him because it did feel like he didn't do anything, but that's not his fault, you know what I mean? He didn't really have a choice. And when he gets the ball on the left as well, he has to cut back in all the time.
Yeah. Like, because you're not going to go down the byline and whip a ball in. That's just not what we do. I felt like, to stick with this for evening, I'll just stay with you. Like, Cody Gakpo was playing left wing the entire season, pretty much with PSV. I know he played a bit centrally for the Netherlands in the World Cup, but he has been playing left wing, and he started his first ever game for Liverpool at left wing.
Yeah.
And now he's been stuck up front, and I don't think that suits him either, I'll be honest. No. I'm not quite sure what we've got in Cody Gakpo, what he is. I'm 98% certain I don't think he's a centre forward by himself.
No, I don't see
he's got the game for that. Everything's the feet, but he isn't as... When Firmino drops in and goes, it doesn't feel like that natural to Gakpo either. He actually held the ball up all right, but he offered no goal threat. He can't go the other way. He has a couple of snapshots, but it doesn't feel. It feels like at the moment, he's another one who. I mean, he might be a left winger, which we've got loads of them. Loads of them, but none of them at the same time.
That's the thing.
I'm not sure he's a centre forward by himself.
No. I don't know. I think we'll probably see him on the left, Nunes through the middle, and obviously Salah on the right in the future. But like you were saying before, if everything's going to be accustomed to Salah, then he's going to start scoring then because he's not doing his job. And that's probably the most frustrating thing for me at the minute is Salah. So I'm not bothered how long it takes Gakpo to start performing, really. Give him his time. Nunes is back. I mean, I know he come on. I just kept thinking to myself, this has got Nunes winner written all over it. Didn't happen, obviously. Didn't get any big moments like that, really. I mean, when Konate booted the ball up from
that was,
it was our best chance. I literally thought to myself, that was it. That was the moment. And if that in my brain, that's the moment, then you know something's not going right. But yeah, I don't know. I'd just give Gakpo time, mate. Just give him loads of time. Everyone expects them to come in firing like Mo did, like Diaz did. And it's just, that's not always the way. But I think keep him to the left and put Nunes through the middle from now on. But just got to say, like, Robbo was brilliant. Yeah. Robbo had an absolutely brilliant performance, to be fair. I think Trent struggled a little bit when he come on. Not too bad. But yeah, apart from that, just nothing to talk. It was just flat, weren't it?
Yeah, underwhelming. Let's go back to, again, there's not too many moments to speak about them, so we'll do things kind of like as an overall picture for now. It feels like in the last two games, Jürgen, Pep Linders, Kravitz, the whole have decided to go back to basics a bit. I think they've realised we're crap defensively.
Yeah.
Like, we are, and that comes both in midfield and a little bit at the back as well. Like, everyone blames on the midfield, but I don't think any of the centre-halves have really covered themselves in glory over the last few months. I get they've had a lot of work to do, which contributes to it, but it feels to me like Jürgen's decided we're going to be difficult to beat and we are trying to nick someone on a moment of quality from a Salah or a Gakpo or an Elliot or someone will do, like Wolves the other day, someone will do a little bit of magic or we'll get one off a set piece or something. In years gone by, Liverpool, like we all had come to know and love, we're able to attack, but also be defensively solid. We had the back doors were closed, Fabinho, Van Dijk, Matip. We were solid. Do you get the sense, that's my take on it, is that he's realised we can't be both, and we can't just try and play through teams because we're getting played off the park. Let's just try and be, like you mentioned, Robbo did a good job, but he was mainly defensive, I thought, in terms of his best work came defensively. It felt like we would be a bit more compact by Chetis, just sit there, and we'll be tough to beat. And I can kind of see why he's made that decision as well.
Definitely. Yeah, and I think he's 100% right to do that. And I was saying this a few weeks back. I was saying just go back to basics because it was getting to the point where, simple defending, you know, stringing some passes together, controlling games, which is something that we've done as well over the last couple of seasons, even when we have had that kind of more intense sort of attacking prowess about us, it still felt like there was large patches where Liverpool were controlling games. There's no way they're even close to doing that now. So even if you can get a 5-minute spell where where Liverpool are controlling it, even if that is in their own half, that's fine. I'd take that at this point. I completely agree with, I thought Andy Robertson was brilliant. I actually thought Trent before he was out, I think the two games before he was out, I thought he was really strong defensively in those games. I've been really disappointed with the centre-backs all season, including Van Dijk before he went out. I think he was really poor when he came back from the World Cup. So yeah, I think that's an issue. I think that, as you say, has an impact on the midfield, because when you've got someone like Van Dijk in particular who organises the entire thing, if he's not quite on it, or if he's slightly slow, or if he's not reading the game right, then that whole sort of system breaks down, because he's, you know, organising it. And there are others around him, obviously, to help him out. But we all, you know, I think we'd all be lying to ourselves if we didn't say that he is kind of, you know, the main man back there. So that's a concern.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks very much for the girls for joining me there. And yet, listen, it wasn't the most enthralling game, but we still had a good old chinwag about what it means in the grand old scheme of things. Moving on then, later that very day, we had the transfer show. It was Dan, it was Chloe, and it was Steve Plunk. Yeah, Liverpool, as we approached transfer deadline day, still loads of news and rumours floating about. And the guys jumped into yet another hot topic.
A report from Italy and Calcio Mercato Web. This claims, the big story of today, of course, is that Jurgen Klopp has decided to move for Federico Chiesa. There's already some chat in our Discord about this one. Just going to bring it up now. Abe has said that it would mean Bobby is off if we were to go and sign him. Yeah. I think Jif has said that we really don't need him, and he'd actually be annoyed if we signed a seventh attacker.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some interesting conversations going on. Let me just scroll up again in one second. Steve doesn't seem to agree with that. So it was simply Darwin that said he'd actually be annoyed if we bought a seventh attacker. And Howdy It's David was also very surprised by the links to Chiesa. So I'm going to come to you first, Chloe, on this one. Actually, just to give you a bit more insight onto the story itself, the article actually portrays the Italian as a potential replacement for Mohamed Salah, who could be off to PSG because they're still interested in him for €80 million. Chloe, first, let's just go Federico Chiesa. What do you think?
Boss player. Incredible. Look, there was a point where before he went to Juventus, I'd have loved Liverpool to get him. Mm-hmm. He's obviously gone through a really bad injury. Yeah. And it's one of them where, look, Ox was boss for a little period. He'd ended his ACL and he's never, ever came back. Virgil van Dijk has been brilliant, but hasn't been the Virgil van Dijk that we knew of before his ACL. Mm-hmm. And it's one of them. I think you're taking a big gamble on a guy that has, you know, been out for a long, long time. And it was a really bad ACL injury. So it's one of them where I just don't believe anything these days. And I'm definitely not believing that with him for Chiesa.
No, it's, you say you don't believe anything. And I get that. And there's so many reports. Like, I've worked in transfers for ages now. There are so many reports, especially when you come from Europe and stuff like that. But listen, sometimes the truth. Like, yeah. I would have sat here and said, Louis Diaz stuff originally. I said, oh, no, not happening. All of a sudden, we sign him 2 days later. Yeah. Jurgen Klopp, to that point, said, we're not going to do any more transfer business in the window. We sign Louis Diaz, et cetera, et cetera. We've done it before, so who knows? But to the point, I think the Chiesa one's a little bit far-fetched, certainly when you sort of factor in the Salah stuff. But Steve, Chloe touches there. He's a phenomenal talent. He's a brilliant player. The injuries are bad ones. They're possibly the worst injury you could get, potentially as a footballer. But what do you make of him as a player more generally? And would he suit Liverpool?
He's a tremendous player. he has no impact on Bobby because he's a right-sided player as opposed to a central player, so I'm not struggling to make that connection personally. Eight games since his ACL, eight games in 22-23 with one goal. Not a massive, brilliant return. ACLs are not what they used to be. Darwin had an ACL, and it doesn't stop his movement. So it's conceivable you can return to something like your former glory, if not better. Juve's current predicament, having had 15 points deducted for some questionable things off the pitch, shall we say?
Not like them either, is it?
No, no, not that they've been banished before, is it, or anything like that. Could actually play into a potential suitor's hands because they're not in great form anyway, and I can't see how they bridge the gap between where they are now in the top and Champions League qualification, which hits them really, really hard in the pocket. And he's probably him and the centre forward, Blažić, are probably the two guys out of there that probably carry the most kudos in European football. So it's not impossible they might cash in. We don't need another player that's got injury history, do we? We need to start looking at what Liverpool need to do is get on that website, Transfer Market, and see who's never missed a game. Start looking at those guys instead of all the ones with the ACLs. So.
Yeah, it's a brilliant website. It gives you all that sort of information. I give it that. I think you're right. I think the point on the Bobby situation is more the fact it's just another attacking number. Like somebody else raised the point in the Discord, that would make sort of seven frontline attackers, if you like. So it would mean that someone would have to go somewhere. Bobby is the obvious answer because he's still out of contract.
Does it?
Well, he's out of contract. I only
can't play at the moment.
No, yeah, it's true. Yeah, there are a few injuries, but I think the Salah factor is a factor. Clearly, he signed a new deal, so you'd not really jump at that straight away. But the interest in PSG is never going to go away. And the report suggests that PSG would look to get Salah for sort of €80 million, whereas Chiesa would cost 60, which I think is probably more their financial troubles
it's
coming
not
into
worth
play.
That, all things considered, right now, Chiesa, now he's off the back of that injury, he's got no form to speak of that you could proportion £60 million against. You know,
I think he's boss.
He is a great player. I think he's worth player. I mean, in the Euro final against England, he was absolutely sensational.
Are you telling me that Darwin Nunes, who's had an ACL, like, is 90 mil?
Darwin Nunes had a 44 GA in the season before. So
yeah, I totally get that. But it's also the Portuguese league, and I think Darwin Nunes will be incredible. I think Chiesa at the right club will also be incredible. I think the other day when he scored that brilliant goal when he came back, he was playing off the left then for them, which is a point of like, we've just signed Gakpo, we've got Darwin Nunes, Jota, who can play off the left, Curtis Jones, if you really needed to, Carvalho. Why would that, like, I just don't see us bringing in Chiesa. However, whoever does get him for 60 mil, and if he went to the Prem, I'd be scared because he's a really good player.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? If he can recover fully from the cruciate, which is clearly a bad injury, but if he shows no sort of ill effects off the back of that, he's not, it's too early to say yet, but if he goes through the rest of the season, for instance, in the summer, if that's still a situation, then Liverpool or any football club will be very wise to go and get him. What I will say on the point about his positional thing is he's made 8 appearances this season on the back of that injury. He's played in 5 different areas of the pitch.
He's
played left, right, central, and in more of a centre midfield position. So whether it be Liverpool again or somebody else, they're getting a hell of a player who can fill so many roles. So it's not really you sign him, then he's got to replace Salah or Bobby or whoever it may be. He can just be another addition, like Diogo Jota was, I suppose, in many ways, another addition to the attacking line. 24 years old, I want to say. I did have it up a second ago. Out of contract in 2025. Brilliant football, like we've already said. Let's just quickly on Kayser before I sort of get a rating and we move on. Let's do like doomsday scenario on it a little bit. Let's say, just for talking's sake, Mohamed Salah does move on in the summer. This summer coming, and we've protected his value by giving him a new deal, and that's great. But PSG come really hard for him because Mbappe goes to somewhere else. If Salah was to move on, would Chiesa be an adequate replacement, Steve?
Yeah, when I said what I said, it's purely off the back of we don't really know how he's going to respond to rehabilitation from a knee injury. There's not a person who watches football that can doubt the lad's ability, but it's just whether he can reach them dizzy heights that he met before. He was absolutely tremendous footballer. You're quite right, some players don't ever recover from those injuries. Some do and some don't. There's still a big question mark around him. So potentially, the Chiesa that we saw prior to the injury is good enough to get in any team in the world.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, 100%.
And that includes ours, and would be an adequate replacement for if it were to happen, PSG by Mo Salah, it would be a sensible choice.
Yeah, well, there's an argument to say that certainly during that European Championship, the Chiesa was like as better than Salah, as good as Salah. Like, he was just phenomenal, wasn't he, Chloe? He was outstanding. So I asked you the same question. If that scenario was to play out, I think we all thought at one point Salah might be on the way out. If that was to rear its head again and Salah was to move on, Chiesa?
I mean, I'd rather do a swap deal for Mbappe if I'm being really cheeky, because that's
what
I'd rather.
Might have to add £100 million quid onto that, to be honest. But, yeah.
But the thing is Salah for 80 mil? No, absolutely never. You're not having him for 80 mil. Mm. If I was in control, you're not having him. Give me 120, give me 140. Sadio Mane, yeah, he was only a year left on his contract, left for 20 mil. One of the best forwards in the Premier League era, left for 20 mil to Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
And I get it all about his contract and he really wanted to go, but that was a joke. Liverpool, we got the boss years out of him for sure, but he still could have done a job for Liverpool Football Club. He was always available. And it felt really bitter, the fact that he left for 20 mil. I just thought that was outrageous. So I think Chiesa would be a really good replacement for Salah. I'd like them both at the same time, but we've got far too many forwards if they're all back and fit. So I don't know how that would ever work. But he's a brilliant player for 60 million, which is actually 50 something.
Yeah.
And obviously, great British pounds, I'd bite your hand off at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so 60 million euros we're talking, I think it's like 56.2 million on the conversion rate today, something along those lines. Quadbod 23. Picks up on my point about saying he can play in midfield. Get him in now. I quite like that. Just to say as well, Ashley Freeford said he rates Chiesa but doesn't think we need him, which I suppose is the point about how many attackers we have when they're all fit, which is hasn't happened as yet. But he does also say if Salah leaves, then yes, go for it. I don't think the Salah leaving stuff is just part of this article, and it's basically suggesting that PSG have strong intentions of coming back in for Mohamed Salah.
It's Messi, isn't it? Messi's future's unclear there, isn't it? That's
because it's some MLS stuff.
Give us Messi. Give it, there we go.
Would you take Messi?
100%. Oh, yeah. I don't. He could be 40. I'd take Lionel Messi. To watch him in a red shirt, I'd die. I'd give absolute limbs to watch Lionel Messi in a Liverpool shirt.
Right then, thanks to Dan and the guys there. Moving on then, it's back to one of my shows again, and I keep saying this every single time, my favourite show of the week, Journo Insights. I had Goal.com's Neil Jones in, a man who's very much in the know about all this kind of stuff, to talk about all of the transfer news that's going on around Liverpool Football Club, because that's where we are at the moment as the deadline day approaches next week. So yeah, here is a clip from me and Neil from this week's Journo Insights show. First topic of the day is Mason Mount, England and Chelsea midfielder. According to a report from The Guardian, it was Jacob Steinberg's report, says Chelsea are stepping up their attempts to agree a new contract with Mason Mount in the face of the growing prospect of Liverpool trying to buy the midfielder this summer. It goes on to say he's got 18 months left on his contract. That hasn't been sorted at time recording, all that kind of stuff. Liverpool have had a long-standing interest in this player, Neil. So, yeah, I'll just throw it to you. It feels like you used the term a few weeks ago, this is a live story. And it was about Matheus Nunes. I like that one. But, again, this does look like something that there's legs to this.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of facets to it. I suppose, number one, 18 months left on your contract if you're a player at a club like Chelsea. And a player who's been very important to them. Obviously, a Champions League winner, pretty much plays every week, doesn't he? And homegrown, England international. So when you get to that stage, if you think about it from a Liverpool point of view, if Trent was at the stage, to be fair, Trent's not too far away from being at that stage. If you got to that stage with a Trent, you'd be thinking, hang on, we need to sort of get this sorted, don't we? There was sort of suggestions, I think probably about 12 months ago, that he was going to sign this sort of mega 7-8 year contract, which is Chelsea's way, isn't it, at the moment? And it's not obviously not materialised. I think he's a very good player, but I think he might need to become a very good player by moving from Chelsea. I don't know what I just have that maybe there's a little feeling of that maybe a change of scenery might be one that benefits someone like him. They're obviously making a lot of moves. You know, we've seen. I mean, we might come on to speak about some of the players, but you know, dealing massively with Enzo Fernandez, with Moises Caicedo, Onana this week from Everton. So they're obviously looking to make significant moves, and the ones that suffer do tend to be the ones that have sort of been around for a long time. You know, you think of sort of the first year of Chelsea spending, and you know it was tough for homegrown players to come through, wasn't it? Because they were bringing in player after player after player under Abramovich. I think City probably experienced something similar. You know, you look at people like Stephen Ireland and those kind of people, Micah Richards. They were sort of phased out. So I could see a world where he does feel or look around and think, I know, do I want to commit the next 5-6 years of my career? I mean, I was speaking to my old colleague from Goal. He works for the Evening Standard now, Naz Kinsella, at the weekend, and I sort of, he was just chatting away about various things, Liverpool and Chelsea. We were sort
of, was this during the game when everyone was asleep?
No, it was pre-game. I mean, we could have continued it. Yeah. Could have continued it throughout the first half. But we were just chatting away a bit about sort of, you know, various players, and I mentioned about Mount, and he sort of said he's a bit of a, if you want to call him, he's a bit of a Jordan Henderson for Chelsea fans. You know, sort of if things go wrong, it's like it almost comes back to him. You know, he seems to be the one who gets the first brunt of criticism. And I would never say I've been a huge fan of his as a player, but it did surprise me when I heard that, because I thought, I thought you know, he's a bit of a Chelsea hero. You know, as I say, a Champions League winner, homegrown. You know, came through, really achieved something, really, by going out on loan for a season, coming back, making an impact. And if you look at the other players that did that, they've all ended up going away. You know, Tomori and Tammy Abraham, people like that.
Done well for themselves.
Yeah, they've done well for themselves. But he's done it at Chelsea. You know, he's stayed around and become a, you know, a mainstay. So I think there are a lot of facets that you look at and think, potential move, you know, potential change of scenery, potential for him to maybe think, no, I'll go and earn some appreciation, earn some money, you know, a place at the front and centre of a team. And then you look at the type of player he is. He can play in both lines, really. He could probably play wide left. He could play as a number eight. You know, he's done both jobs to a good degree. You know, you wouldn't say he's had a great season this time around, but he's a creative player. He can score goals. He's got good set piece delivery. Very energetic, very. I mean, I was speaking to someone about who was the player I was speaking about? I've forgotten this already. Mm-hmm. Bobby Clark. That was it. When I watched Bobby Clark playing for Liverpool's under 21s and 19s, and I said to someone at the academy, I said, oh, it reminds me a bit of Mason Mount.
Yeah.
You know, just the way he goes across the pitch, and he's got a little bit of everything about him. And the feedback I got from the coach that I spoke to was, yeah, but Mount is something, you know, a level up in terms of dynamism and the sort of way he covers the pitch. So if you're thinking about dynamism covering the pitch in Liverpool, you know, that's something Liverpool are lacking at the moment. So I think it's one to definitely keep an eye on. You know, the other thing to say is these stories do tend to appear when you're sort of locked in tense negotiations and you want to see it, you know, you want to get this over the line and the agent wants to sort of have a resolution to the contract situation. So it wouldn't amaze me at all if we went the other way and you saw Mount get his new deal and, you know, get the demands. But I do think there's a lot around the story and a lot around the sort of the player that would make you say, yeah, well, if there was an opportunity there, I think Liverpool would do it.
Yeah, there's loads we can go in on this one, so I'm going to do it in a bit. I'm going to look at it from a Chelsea point of view first and Mason Mount's point of view. So going on with this article, he says Mount, who's on 75 grand a week, makes him one of the lowest earners at Chelsea. He wants Chelsea to prove the value.
Yeah, that bleeds for
him. So is Mason. He says there's a risk of making one of their most dedicated players feel underappreciated. You mentioned before, Chelsea are willing to give him a pay rise and make him an offer at a reasonable level. That's what you say, and talks are due to resume. Just want to bring up the fact that Chelsea sign, and you've already mentioned it, there's a chance between now and this being going out or whatever that this change, as it stands, this calendar, well, in this season, so summer and January combined, they brought in Fofana, Mudrick, Cucurella, Sterling, Badiashile, Koulibaly, Maduke, Chukwuemeka, Santos, Aubameyang, Fofana, the other Fofana, João Felix as well. So they have brought Mudrick, he's at the top there as well. They've brought lots of players in, and there's a lot of money spent. Look at the fees involved. €80 million, 70, 65, 56, 38, 30. Big money that Chelsea have been spending. Everyone's seen the top goalie and what he's been up to. There has to be consequences to that. Not even in terms of a financial thing, just in terms of how big your squad can be. That's also another reason why, if your mate, like you say, if you're Liverpool going, there might be an opportunity, because I think it's fair to say, moving on the story, Liverpool have had an interest in this player a couple of times in the past. They thought they've had him at a young age, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
And again, a little bit down the line, they were interested in him. I think it was the time, they tried to, well, they, when they did sign Dominic Solanke from Chelsea, there was talk about it then. So this is a player Liverpool have had a long-standing interest in as well.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was at the Echo, myself and Andy Kelly did a sit-down podcast with Michael Beale, who was, he was, I'm trying to think whether he was at Sao Paulo or he'd just come back from Sao Paulo. He had that spell, obviously, as assistant manager to Rogério Ceni. And I remember him speaking about, obviously, I mean, Michael Beale sort of, he's got a sort of a vested interest in so many players throughout the Premier League, you know, Solanke being one, Declan Rice. But Mason Mount was one, and I remember him mentioning him and saying we thought we had him when he was sort of 15, 16. You know, they thought Liverpool were going to be able to get him, and Chelsea didn't allow him to come, or, you know. obviously stepped up and gave him what he needed or what he wanted. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Michael Beale's not at Liverpool anymore. A lot of the people who were there at the time aren't at Liverpool anymore. But, yeah, it's no secret that Liverpool have liked him. But you look at Chelsea, and that's the other thing about Chelsea is there's a lot of signings coming in, but that also has a knock-on effect. I mean, you see stories this week about Hakim Ziyech potentially going. I mean, I thought he was probably their best attacking player last week before Mudryk came on, but they're talking about him being allowed to leave for quite a low fee on loan, potentially up to Newcastle or Everton.
Aubameyang was meant to be at one point back to Barcelona because you can't play for three teams.
I mean, Christian Pulisic, I think, would have been loaned or sold in this window had he not picked up an injury. I think there's rumours already about Sterling potentially getting moved on. You know, you look at someone like Callum Hudson-Odoi out on loan in Germany. You know, there are going to be good players who are going to get cast aside by Chelsea, just how it is. You know, you look at the amount of left-backs they seem to be, or left-sided defenders that they're looking at, you know.
Like 10 number 10s.
It wouldn't amaze you at all if Cucurella ends up in a position where it's like, actually, no, you're not for us. You know, so, yeah, they've got so many players. I know they've got some players out of contract, Jorginho and Kante in the summer. But you will see good players on the market, I think, from Chelsea. I mean, I think Mount would be a change in the sense of, like, that would be a, wow, that's like a sort of a banker player being available. But there are going to be some, you know, clubs, you can call them gambles if you like, because I do always worry about that when you have a player that's sort of been cast aside, and Mount's not in that category, but you look at someone like Pulisic, and you're like, how much damage has that sort of done to them, really, you know, to go from the sort of bright young thing, real big signing, to actually, you know, almost deemed not good enough by a big club. But I think some clubs are going to get some pretty good players out of Chelsea over the next couple of transfer windows, because there's so many of them just knocking around. You look at, like, I mean, on the bench on the weekend was Ruben Loftus-Cheek, and you think, God, he was in England's World Cup squad 2018. You know, he was around that. There's various players that you just think, wow, like, what happened to him? You know, I was watching a game not so long ago, and Ross Barkley was playing for Nice, and you're like, God, remember the furore about him? You know, Chelsea trying to get him and did nothing, really, did he? Didn't sort of even leave an imprint, really, at Chelsea. So there's going to be, I think there'll be a few more of them with this current spending spree. And, you know, but judging by the rumours we're seeing around the club, I don't think that spending spree is going to calm down.
No, you're right. From a Liverpool point of view, then we speak, and we're going to speak about midfielders, we always do. So, but, like, that's a given, and he can play as a midfielder. He reminds me a little bit, like, he could do, Jürgen loved Adam Lallana when he was fit. He absolutely loved that. I know there's varying views on Adam Lallana towards the end of his career, but when Jürgen first arrived, he was like a mainstay in the team, getting double-digit goals. It was just the injuries that let him down, and Jürgen loved having that type of player. Yeah. He's mentioned a few times, what you mentioned before, pace, any legs in midfield, that kind of stuff. He would provide that. And also, with the second one, is this home... You raised it before, the homegrown stuff. There's a chance this, over the next 12 months, for example, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, probably going to leave. We're going to speak about him a little bit later in the show, of course. James Milner's out of contract that time. Nat Phillips, again, we speak on Nat every week, but there's a chance that he moves on. At some point, you have to recognise you do need English players in your squad, at least. Jordan Henderson's not getting any younger. You know, you've got some, obviously. Trent is here for a while, and Elliot, Gomez, Curtis Jones. There's some, but you need like 7 or 8 of them.
Yeah.
He would also fill that void that appears to be coming down the road as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you look at... You look at, like you say, there's two straight off the bat that are probably going to leave in the summer. I know there was a story, or there was comments from Jürgen last week about Milner and potentially giving him another year, which I think we've discussed that on a previous show, you know, possibility of that. I think Stefan Bajcetic is now homegrown for the Champions League.
Yeah.
I have to check on the Premier League. He's definitely a club-trained player now for the Champions League. That's another box that gets ticked, and you see a few. I mean, Arsenal looking at Declan Rice for the summer, aren't they? I think that's part of the thinking behind that is a homegrown type of player. And we've seen Calvin Phillips. I'm sure at Manchester City was
Scott Carson's on their bench for a reason.
But I don't think City looked at Calvin Phillips and thought he's exactly the midfielder we want. You know, I think there was an element of that. That's another box that Mount ticks. And also, you know, you look at the sort of suitability, really. He's played in the Premier League for 4 or 5 seasons. He's played in the Champions League every season. He's done well in the Champions League. You know, as I say, he's got a couple of different positions potentially that he can fill. You know, you look at Liverpool have a lot of those players. They can play off the left if you need them to. They have a fair few of those, so maybe you can nail them down more into that number 8 position. I say energy, pressing. You know, he's good at that. He seems very tactically. I know Frank Lampard absolutely loved him when he was at Chelsea because of his tactical sort of awareness and ability to play in his system or whatever system was asked of him. So yeah, there's a lot of things that
every
make
manager
him
seems to pick him.
Yeah, exactly. And England, you know, and Chelsea, and a little bit again, I compare him to Jordan Henderson again in a different way. But you know, it does say something. You know, I don't think you might get fans and sort of, you know, sort of YouTubers and those kind of people saying, oh, I don't know what he does, or he's overrated or whatever. But you look and yeah, you know, plenty of caps for England. It was in the side, obviously, in the World Cup, when you would say there was more exciting players, or informed players on the bench, and people like Rashford and those kind of people. But he was in the side because he brings balance. He brings, you know, trust, I think, from the manager that, you know, what we need him to do, whether it's off the ball, on the ball, he'll do it. And yeah, you know, as I say, I've not been as, I wouldn't say he's been a player that I've gone, oh, what a player, Mason Mount. But he is someone that you go, well, yeah, he plays for Chelsea and he's always in the team and he's always in the England team. So he obviously is a high-level player.
I think also he's 24. He's better. Like he's been around for ages. I think he made his Chelsea debut like 2017, obviously, because he's been around since a kid. Yeah. He had that loan at Derby in 2018-19 under Frank Lampard. So he's been around for a long, long time. I think people forget, like, this isn't the best you're going to get of this player. If you sign him in the next, well, I mean, highly doubtful over the next couple of weeks, obviously, this window, but like summer or even get him on a free the year after, you're getting Mason Mount at 24, 25, yeah. 26. That's what he should be at. He should be getting better.
Liverpool are short of that age player, aren't they, in that midfield? Yeah. That's the issue with Liverpool's midfield, really. It's a donut almost, isn't it? It's young and old. And it doesn't have those peak age players that you're going to get their growth, but also already from a high level. You know, you might get mega levels of sort of rapid growth from Stefan Bajcetic or Harvey Elliott or whoever, but you want those players that they're growing, but they're already, you know, Champions League level starters, and Mount obviously is that. Obviously, I think it'll be a tough one. Obviously, Liverpool haven't really taken a player, have they, from, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain's probably the last one I can think of that they've taken from another top Premier League club. So that would be, you know, you imagine that would be factored into Chelsea's thinking that they don't want to be doing it. But you are also looking around. I do wonder about this just longer term, really. All these clubs are fishing in the same pond a little bit, aren't they? You know, you've seen Sterling leave City for Chelsea. You've seen Zinchenko, Gabriel Jesus. There is almost an acceptance that nowhere else has really got the money to buy these players, you know, outside of a few clubs out, you know, across Europe. So if we do want to get rid of some of these assets and make some money, sorry, we're going to have to dance with the devil a little bit and give it to a rival Premier League club. And, you know, we're seeing Arsenal with Declan Rice, aren't we? You know, looks like they're very much in the queue for him. I'm pretty sure there'll be some other, you know, City players, Chelsea players who are going to get moved on. And yeah,
Newcastle stands out now.
Newcastle, yeah.
Andy Gordon.
Newcastle, they're sort of to be added into that place now, aren't they? With some of the, you know, progress they've made this season and obviously the money that they've got behind them. So we might see a little bit more sort of cross-pollinisation, if you like, from top Premier League clubs.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, I mentioned before, I think there's a live story. I think there's legs in it. Like, literally legs.
Let's hope there's legs.
Yeah, let's hope there's legs. Liverpool could do with some of them, right? Yeah, I hope you enjoyed that one. Thanks again to Neil for some wonderful, wonderful insight. Lastly then, in terms of this show anyway, I have got a clip for you from the latest edition of The Deep Dive. And this one, unsurprisingly, you probably think, is all about Mason Mount. Yeah, again, been linked to Liverpool this week, the Chelsea and England star. So yeah, check out a clip from The Deep Dive with Chris Pajak and Josh Williams analysing Mason Mount from a tactical point of view.
Liverpool, I think, have had a long-standing interest in Mason Mount. From, you know, maybe 6-7 years of interest, maybe the entire time Klopp's been at Liverpool. What were your initial thoughts on the links?
I think they make sense. I've been quite surprised at just how much he splits opinion. By all accounts, he's the Jordan Henderson of the Chelsea fan base, isn't he? In terms of people either thinking he's really good and very valuable, or people thinking he's a waste of space and shouldn't be in the team. But I think he suits Klopp's game. Very intense player without the ball. Loves to press. I think he's a natural presser. He reminds me a little bit of Adam Lallana in that sense. Yeah. And with the ball, he's really tricky. You know, good in tight spaces. Creative and things like that. So, and he's inclined to nick a goal as well. So I can see the logic in the move. I believe the links. I think there's probably something in that. And I think he's a good target for us to have if it's doable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only other thing that I'd add to that, really, because I agree with everything you said there, is he likes to join the attack, as in maybe like a late run into the box and stuff. And again, Adam Lallana at his peak was good at that. I think that's a great reference point, Adam Lallana, for him. Obviously, we know how much Jürgen loved Adam Lallana, certainly that first season. He was the guy who probably showed the rest of Liverpool squad how to be a Jürgen Klopp player. Obviously, I think they were next-door neighbours for a time as well, weren't they?
And, yeah.
You know, he just absolutely adored him. So I think it could be a good signing for Liverpool. I think, you know, generally speaking, last weekend aside, I think he's always caused us problems. But it's that sort of creative sort of midfielder that Liverpool could want. And when I say creative, I mean dangerous, as in can nick a goal type of midfielder. Mm. One of the things that I did want to look at, I found this on Twitter, a quote from Mason Mount going back to November. He says, "I like to think I'm a traditional midfielder, even though I can play a number of roles for the team. I've always said that I'm best as a number eight, and I've played there ever since I was a young kid. I like to work from box to box, help out defensively, but also get forward to score and assist goals for the team. That's where I think my strengths are. I'm versatile, so I can adapt and play higher up or a lot deeper. For me, in this day and age, certainly being able to play different positions is so key. You see formations change even during games. You can play two or three different roles in a game." Does that not sound like a Jürgen Klopp player?
Yeah, yeah.
And a Jürgen Klopp signing?
Well, I like that he said it as well, because that's personally how I would use him. And I think a lot of the criticism maybe that surrounds him stems from what people think he is or think he should be or whatever. Because I think if you ask a lot of people, you know, 100 people or something, where does Mason Mount play, you'd get a lot of different answers. Mm. Some people would say he's a forward. Some people would say he's a 10. Some people would say he's an 8. Played on out wide on sometimes wings, yeah. And things like that. And I think that has basically shaped the perception of him as to what he is. Because, say, for example, last season, I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but just touching on the numbers, the basic numbers at least, he scored 10 Premier League goals last season, non-penalty, that is, and registered 10 assists, right? So if he's playing as a forward and he's doing that...
Not good enough.
Maybe you want more, yeah. If he's playing as an 8 and he's doing that, that's ideal. You know, that's more
brilliant.
Than enough. Exactly, yeah. That's more than enough. That's the goal scoring attacking midfielder that people think Klopp has been without for his whole Liverpool tenure. The kind of like Gerrard, Lampard type player, De Bruyne maybe. So I think that is a massive thing for Mount. I think he's almost been a victim of his own versatility, really.
Yeah, and we've seen, you know, obviously a lot was made about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain when he started talking about being a central midfielder and stuff like that. But Klopp tried him there and it worked for a period of time, 17-18. I think, you know, we could see exactly what Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain could bring to the side. But it is those similarities, I think, with Adam Lallana that draw my attention more than anything, because Adam Milano would do you a job on the wing if you absolutely needed him to. And there was games when he did play on the wing and Adam Milano would do you a job in the eight. Adam Milano's done us a job in the six in that Burnley game, do you remember?
Yeah.
You know, this is a player who naturally wants to go and win the ball back. And I think Mason Mount wants to do that as well. One of the things that I just wanted to touch upon before we get into some of his stats and stuff like that, for want of a better word, is, you know, it's his contract, I think, as well, which is probably quite appealing to Liverpool, who are notoriously tight-fisted. This is a guy who's on £75,000 a week at the moment, rumoured to be on £75,000 a week. Contract runs out summer 2024. And he's just seen a lot of lads come in on at Chelsea on big ass wages.
Yeah.
I mean, Raheem Sterling rumoured to be on £325,000 a week. There's a couple of lads over, Thiago Silva's over £300,000 a week. You know, you've got Kai Havertz on big wages. To be fair to Chelsea, the Mudrić one, apparently he's only on like £90,000 to £100,000 a week, but obviously that's spread over the eight and a half year contract or something mental like that for him. So this could be posturing from an agent linking Liverpool to Mason Mount at a time when he's probably talking to Chelsea about a new contract. But bare minimum, Mason Mount's probably looking for double his £75,000 a week, would you say?
Yeah, well, I think based on what you've just said there as well, I wouldn't be surprised if he was like borderline unhappy there, because as you say, they're signing all kinds of players all over the pitch. If you look at Koulibaly, for example, he looks finished to me based on what I've seen. He's on over 300k just signed, and they're getting all these players and tons of attackers as well, by the way. But they won't give Mount, who is an academy graduate, who plays every single week for them, never misses a game.
Been there since we're 6 years old.
Exactly. Every coach picks him, by the way. Tuchel, Lampard, Potter. Even Southgate. Even Southgate, mate. He's relentlessly in the team. Yet they won't present him with a deal. And on top of that, you've just mentioned there that he thinks he's an eight. Chelsea usually play with a two. And maybe a 10 ahead of them. So he's not really playing in his favoured position either. So all in all, it does feel like a long shot, doesn't it? But at the same time, if you look at the kind of upheaval at Chelsea at the minute, I wouldn't be surprised if he's kind of looking at it all and thinking like, I need to get out of here, basically.
Could this be, and I know that the FFP rules obviously look to be changing, and this is probably because of the loophole that Chelsea have exposed. You know, I think over the next year or so, it's changing, isn't it? So that the length of a player's transfer fee is going to be 5 years maximum. And the loophole that Chelsea exploited was they're paying the 100 million it was for Merdick over, fucking hell, my pronunciation name is terrible, over 8.5 years, which means, you know, if they're paying that over 4 years, for example, they'd be paying 20 million a year or whatever it would be, or 20 plus. Now they're paying 10 million a year because they've spread it over 8.5 years. So this is something that FFP have tried to do, but Chelsea are doing it. They found the loophole. They've exploited the loophole. That's how they've got as many players through the door as possible. At Chelsea, there will be a part of this where Chelsea think, we actually need to balance the books a little bit here, lads. And Mason Mount right now, could he be a saleable asset?
Well, it strikes me a little bit like the Oxlade-Chamberlain case a few years back, because Arsenal didn't really want to sell him, but they were well aware that he was going to run his contract down, he was going to leave for free anyway, and he ended up going for about £35 million.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mount would, even despite having a year left on his deal, I think Chelsea would still probably demand at least 50 for him, I think. 24-year-old, English homegrown and all that stuff, good player, Champions League winner and things, so I think they could probably realistically do that. And I think if they did, I'd probably say he's worth that amount as well. Whether Liverpool have that, I don't know. But, you know, all things considered, I think he's a legitimate target for Liverpool at the minute.
Yep. Cheers, Chris. Cheers, Josh. That show is an absolute belter. It is each and every week. Right then, if you want to listen to those shows in their entirety, or you can watch them, if you want to watch them as well, that is available to you over on redmenplus.com. And like I say, just for the listeners of this show, because I love you guys so much, it's gone so well so far, this weekly roundup show, I want to box you guys off with a little discount. So what I've done, if you sign up as a club captain on a yearly subscription, enter the code weekly, WEEKLY, when you sign up, and you'll get it for 50%, and it works out at around 48p a week. Absolute no-brainer. 48p for up around about somewhere between 5 to 10 hours of content each and every week. I mean, no other subscription service is offering that for that cheap of a price. So yeah, 48p a week. If you head over to redmenplus.com, sign up, as a yearly club captain. Enter the code weekly when you do that on the payment screen, and yeah, we'll box you off with a big old discount. Right then, I'll be back next week with another roundup from Redmen Weekly. Until then, I'll catch you all soon. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.